and welcome to this, the 14th episode of the Eastern Arc podcast series. These podcasts are an opportunity to explore the research, collaborations and other work going on across the universities of East Anglia, Essex and Kent. I'm Phil Ward, and today we're going to look at decolonising the curriculum and wider issues of tackling inequalities in UK universities. The push to decolonise the curriculum has been gathering momentum for a decade, but has been given increased urgency in the last year with the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement and a wider awareness of ingrained and embedded inequalities, particularly within institutions. But how does this work in practice? What can be done, and how difficult will it be to reset long-held Eurocentric assumptions? With me to discuss these issues are five colleagues from across the Eastern Arc universities, three members of staff and two students. Together, they have advocated for change within their institutions and have worked to address entrenched notions of privilege and identity. They'll discuss the barriers they've faced, the successes they've achieved, and the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead. Barbara Edawumi from Kent joined the university in 2017 as a sociology lecturer. She currently works as a postdoctoral research associate in student success to develop and conduct research on BME, academic progression, engagement, and belonging to help close the white BME awarding gap. She leads the Diversity Mark project at Kent. She's joined by the Diversity Mark intern for the project, Patrice Mighton. Hannah Gibson from Essex is a senior lecturer in linguistics. She works primarily on African languages and has an interest in language and identity, as well as the relationship between linguistics and social justice. She's worked with students and colleagues on a number of projects looking at decolonising the curriculum. Claire Hines is a lecturer in literature and creative writing at UEA. Her fiction and non-fiction writing explores Black British identities, and she's previously worked as a news editor for The Voice newspaper, a writer for national newspapers and a BBC television producer. She's currently leading and implementing on decolonising the curriculum within her school, including the creation of a BIPOC student ambassador scheme. Amy Ibarra-Hempel is one of the ambassadors on the scheme. Hannah, I was wondering if you could give the wider context. Was the UK relatively slow in exploring issues around decolonising the curriculum, or did it follow quite quickly after South Africa or America, where perhaps the issues are more at the forefront of current affairs?
Yeah, I think what we really saw is a coming together of lots of movements that were happening in different places. And in many ways, these are not new movements, they're not new calls. I think earlier discussions were about getting people into universities, both students and staff. And then perhaps that was followed by, now we're at university, you know, what are we being taught? Who's doing the teaching? And I think the parallels with movements internationally, globally, only added strength to those calls. So there were real parallels with what was going on at the University of Cape Town. That was, kind of the visible sort of aspect of that was this Roads Must Fall, which had parallels then in the UK and here as well. But I think there people were saying, well, fees must fall. Like, what is the implication of having, an increase in fees, how that will affect students differently? Different students will be affected by that. In the context of South Africa, where they talk more about transformation rather than decolonization, what would a transformative, university look like when it had more people in it and more different people? There are certainly parallels to movements in the US, and you mentioned in the introduction, like the Black Lives Matter, which really, in the UK we've been talking about for the last year, but is certainly doesn't only have its origins in 2020. So in my eyes, it's lots of work that's been carried out by lots of people, certainly in many cases student-led, but students and staff really coming together. And then, hashtag, so Twitter, online presences, webinars, social movements, the visibility of that, I think, really came together. Kind of brought us to this current moment.
That's interesting. You mentioned Twitter and hashtags. Do you think it would have gained the same momentum and the same buy-in if social media hadn't existed?
I mean, I have to say, maybe this reflects my age, but I mean, I know people have been doing anti-racist work for decades, and that obviously precedes social media. Perhaps some of the messaging moves more quickly now, and the kind of scale that it's taken up by is perhaps made easier by social media, by the internet and things like that. I suppose you could flip that on its head and say, but what good does a tweet with hashtag Black Lives Matter do? You know, of course, that's really important. But at the end of the day, those of us who are here are interested in, and what then are the universities doing about that? What actual changes are taking place in our classrooms, in our teaching practices, you know, in our like physical university spaces? So yeah, I think social media has had a huge role to play in that, but we shouldn't yet sort of pat ourselves on the back and think everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, social media can be quite a bubble, can't it? And it's getting the message, I guess, through a number of avenues, a number of platforms. Claire, can you say a bit about how you initially got involved in the decolonizing the curriculum movement within your school?
Yeah, well, I think it started off about quite a few years ago, actually, probably 3 or 4 years ago, when I decided for Black History Month to host a panel discussion on the question of why is the curriculum so white. I invited Dr. Robert Beckford to talk to students and staff. We hadn't had masses of discussion within the university at that time about the issue. And I had thought that, you know, perhaps a handful of students would show up to this discussion, and was absolutely amazed when a whole lecture theatre arrived for this panel discussion. And we also had sort of members of faculty as well on the panel to discuss this subject. And it just made me realise how, you know, students were desperate, really, to have these discussions. And even though UEA isn't the most sort of multicultural university and is definitely not in a very kind of multicultural city, these questions were seen, you know, these questions about curriculums were seen as applicable to all students. And students felt very strongly that in some ways they weren't getting a fair deal. So that's how it started. But I mean, prior to that, I went into education, having worked in the media, as you said, and just being surprised, seeing as a postgraduate student that Black and brown students were dropping out of courses, that, you know, I couldn't see a diversity in terms of teaching staff. And when people asked me, you know, do you think you'll stay in academia? I said, well, no, I can't see that's going to happen. I don't see anyone like me here. So there were those kinds of questions beforehand. You know, that's how I got involved in the start. But as previous speakers have said, this has really come from students, the push, in terms of really saying unequivocally, we need change, curriculums need to change, the way universities are run need to change.
Amy, I've seen you nodding throughout what Claire was saying. Can you say a bit about your experience and how you got involved in the movement?
Yeah, absolutely. As Claire was saying, there is a lot of push from students at UEA for the university to do better. Personally, I got involved in the decolonizing of my university through the initial pilot scheme of the BIPOC ambassadors, which was launched the last academic year when I was in my second year. I'm a third year now. And I decided to apply for the role because it had bothered me since I started university, since I started doing English literature at UEA. Our curriculum was incredibly white, incredibly male, and there was just no diversity in the text we were reading. It was very tokenistic, and it was incredibly frustrating, especially because our staff and student body are also majority white. So at times it was incredibly isolating. Yeah, that was just something that always really irritated me when I started a new module and I got the reading list and there was maybe one Black text, one text by a person of colour, unless it was a module kind of focused around race, which is, you know, I found that unacceptable. And I was very lucky that this opportunity kind of came about at my university, that they launched this scheme. Yeah, since then, Claire and I, with some various ambassadors, have been trying to make a change. Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me a bit about what the BIPOC ambassador scheme actually is?
So the BIPOC ambassador scheme is essentially a scheme where two student ambassadors are employed per school, depending on how many schools are involved in the scheme. And together with a lead from the school, we work together with staff and students to try and enact some short-term and long-term change in the system of the school, in the way that teaching is provided, in the teaching that is provided, the reading. We try to create spaces for students of colour. So in our school, the School of Literature, Drama and Creative Writing, we have quite a big problem with community, because, like I say, the staff and student body is majority white. And then the fact that we read mostly white male texts exacerbates that. And essentially what Claire and I do, along with the other BIPOC ambassador this year, Amber, we together with staff and we listen to student demands for improvement. And we try and find a middle ground, kind of acting as a bridge between the staff and student voices. And we have a few projects that are currently up and running and in development. So I'll just briefly explain those. First and foremost, what we've been working on since the beginning of the scheme, almost 2 years ago now, is a BIPOC student safe space. That was kind of always our main priority alongside decolonizing the curriculum. We found it incredibly important that students of colour in LDC had a space where they felt they could be themselves and they could share experiences without any fear of judgment. And most importantly, they could find other students of colour if that's what they wanted, because we are far and few between in this school. So essentially, it's developed into a drop-in safe space. That's a casual environment for students to find community. As of right now, of course, it's virtual, but that's working, you know, as good as it can do. It takes place a few times a semester, and it's really a space that students can shape in whichever way they like. In February, we had a safe space, singular safe space, where we spent an hour chatting about our experiences in studying English as students of colour, and we concluded it with a kind of UEA and LDC themed quiz, just a lighthearted silly quiz, which had been intended as an icebreaker, but there ended up not being any ice to break at the beginning of the session, which was brilliant. So we kind of ended on like a light note, but it's really just a space for students to freely express themselves and feel as though, you know, others are absolutely not judging them. Other things we're working on include decolonizing the creative writing admissions portfolio. So UEA is quite well known for its creative writing. And that's also the reason I came to this university, as many other students also do. And the creative writing degree at UEA has quite a diverse curriculum, and it really encourages diversity and experimentation in your writing. However, we felt that the admissions process didn't quite reflect this and has potential to deter prospective students of colour. So as a result, we are rewriting some of the tasks given to students in an application process, in order to make everyone feel like their writing is represented and welcomed. This includes encouraging openly and explicitly hybrid forms of writing and references to native language or native languages or English vernaculars, because at the moment that's not being said outright, and we really feel like it has to be, because so myself and Amber, the other ambassador, we both incorporate that into our own writing and have done so since we've been at this university. But we may have done so sooner or have felt more welcomed if we knew that the university really wanted that, which it does. But the admissions process doesn't quite say that clearly. That's what we're working on. Apart from that, the student partnerships director of our school reached out to us regarding diversity and inclusivity in the SSLC, the Staff Student Liaison Committee of our school, which is used to create discussion around university practices between staff and students. And it remains quite a white space, both in terms of staff and students who attend. So in order to improve the inclusivity of the organisation, he proposed to set a number of spaces to be reserved for students of colour at every SSLC. And we've been in conversation with the Student Partnerships Director about how to do this, how to encourage engagement with students of colour. Lastly, very briefly, we're currently in development working on improving a buddy scheme at our university, in order to make it more inviting to students of colour in terms of finding community with other students of colour should they want this. So the buddy scheme is very developed and very well known at our university. So what we're hoping to do is to just improve the language around its promotion and its encouragement of students to attend so that students feel more welcome to say, I do actually want to find community through this. So that's loosely everything we're doing.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Amy. That was a really interesting primer on the BIPOC ambassador scheme. And I've got a million questions to lead on from that, but I want to bring in Patrice and see if your experience is similar to Amy's in terms of how you felt the Black experience was integrated into university systems, whether you had a voice and so forth. So I'd be interested in your experience.
I feel like for me, because I grew up in London, so I was there was quite a diverse environment around me. And then when I came to university, I always kind of expected it to be a predominantly white space, because that's how I've always kind of like seen institutions, or when they talk about university, the representation you see often tends to be predominantly white. So I was expecting it to be that environment. However, when experiencing it, I kind of felt the shift. I was like, I did feel in a lot of ways there was a smaller space for ethnic minorities to kind of really be themselves and have representation. So I would think that my degree is sociology, so I presume there would be a bit more diversity within that school, because a lot of the topics in sociology talk about diversity, inequality and things like that. So I did think that there would be a more of a range. However, in first year, I saw that the majority of the things that we were studying were predominantly white male authors and studies and theories and things. Like, I kind of guess I gave up trying to look for myself within the curriculum, because I kind of just accepted that in one sense. I was like, okay, well, I guess this is what sociology is. But then when I did come across the Diversity Mark internship and saw the work that was being done, I did think that was a really good thing to do. It was to challenge it, to look at the evidence and try and understand it and see ways that we could like increase diversity within the curriculum. Because I will say, growing up in a diverse area, when I did see people like myself, it did kind of inspire me to do more in those avenues. Like currently the work, when we're looking at the curriculum and where we've looked at the reading list and everything, and we've said that it's simply not enough. There's not enough representation of ethnic minorities and different people within the curriculum. So for me, I guess it was like the Diversity Mark internship kind of gave hope that there will be some changes in universities and that there can be changes implemented. We shouldn't just like accept the institutions as they are.
Thanks for that, Patrice. And that's a really interesting way of describing it. It really struck me, the phrase you came up with, I gave up trying to find myself in the curriculum, which is a really interesting way of seeing it. And I want to come back to issues about the balance of the curriculum. But before going on to that, can you just tell me a bit about what the Diversity Mark project is?
There's four of us, four interns, and our roles were to research the SSPSSR department at our school. So we were given a selection of reading lists to look at. All the data was collected and we evaluated and we looked at, okay, there's this percentage of white male authors within this reading list, within this module, and there's, say, this percentage of ethnic minorities, there's this percentage of women, and there's this percentage of men. So we looked at both ethnicity and gender. And so basically the aim of our role was to kind of like do the research ourselves and to be a part of the understanding the curriculum. And also part of our role was to organize focus groups with our peers. And the focus groups were to understand the opinions and the experiences that other people had. So it was great. We could add to the experience with our own experiences. So we could talk about our own experiences, but also others who may not have known or may not have thought about the curriculum in the ways that we did whilst we were auditing. So it gave us an opportunity to talk to other people and understand their experiences. Currently, we're evaluating all the data that we have collected and that we've done as interns. And it has been a bit difficult because of COVID to do certain things and to continue things as they were planned. However, right now we're trying to put the plans in action to actually change the curriculum and to like make module conveners aware of the curriculum as it is now. So I guess to summarize, our role was to kind of like challenge, to research and challenge and understand and think of ways that we could change it and think of ways that we could spread awareness and understanding of the curriculum as it stands now and how we can change it and improve it.
One of the key things that came out of working with students was that they were able to really convey their reflections and understanding to conveners. The students were able to tell them, look, I don't see myself here in the curriculum, and this is how it makes me feel in terms of lack of belonging and in terms of lack of engagement that I have with some of the theories that you're teaching me, and also some of the text, or most of the text really, that you're using to teach me with. What are you going to do about it? So that's what Patrice meant by challenging, you know, the actual processes of pedagogical practices. We found critical race theory to be quite central as our theoretical framework. For one, about talking about white privilege, but secondly, about storytelling. This is a key aspect of critical race theory that we have applied to the research in Diversity Mark, where we're getting the students, such as Patrice and others, to tell their story about learning, not only within a white curriculum, but Kent is quite a white university.
Hearing about the road travelled so far and the part played by students in effecting change is an important and inspiring lesson. Next time we'll explore in a little more detail just how white the current curriculum is and how receptive the white universities that Barbara alluded to at the end are to change. Join us next time for the second of this three-part podcast series.